I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please.
All right.
May it please the court, my name is Tiffany Crawford. I'm with the law office of Shelley F. Wood. I was a public defender before going into private practice, and I was appointed to this case in the Circuit Court of Norfolk for trial. I represent the interests of Ms. Danielle Clark. She is also known as Danielle Stiff and Danielle Slater due to marriages and her maiden name. I am asking this court to find the testimony of Latasha Brookman and her minor daughters to be inherently incredible and reverse the guilty finding for the charge of unlawfully discharging a missile in an occupied building.
When we have sufficiency claims, there are a couple of, especially based on whether testimony is inherently credible, I always ask the question to make sure I know the limits of the argument.
Correct.
If Ms. Brookman is believed, all of the other elements of the offense are made out.
Correct, Jonah. That is the only testimony that was offered in the jury trial, which I was the defense attorney for. It was Ms. Brookman, and then she offered her minor children to corroborate her evidence. That is the entire sum of the Commonwealth's case.
But so the evidence is sufficient unless she, for some reason, as a matter of law, cannot be believed.
Correct, Your Honor.
All right.
Your Honor, I'd like to point out that Ms. Clark wanted to be here today. However, she is in the hospital unexpectedly. Her father is behind me in her place. Ms. Brookman alleges that on January 10th, 2016, her window was broken. She claims the window was broken by my client, Ms. Clark. Her testimony is inherently incredible, and the conviction of Ms. Clark is for unlawfully throwing a missile at an occupied building should be overturned. In this case, the standard is inherently incredible, and there's case law that has been relied upon by this court in determining what is inherently incredible. The best way to define the standard is to use the court's own words. It must either be a manifestly false that a reasonable man ought not to believe it, or it must be shown to be false by objects or things as to the existence of a meaning which reasonable men should not differ. And that's from Cardwell versus Commonwealth. The court has also said in Robertson that the verdict may be disturbed if it's so contrary to human experience as to render it unworthy of belief. I argue today that Ms. Brookman's testimony before the jury in the city of Norfolk is incredible. It is a story that is so fantastical it should not be believed. She alleges.
Well, in its particulars, mm-hmm. you there may be a thing, but the just general notion that there is some sort of lover's triangle and one of them throws a rock through somebody else's window, that doesn't strike me as beyond human experience.
Well, not that, Your Honor, but the instance and how she's saying it happened, Your Honor. And I think that's what the court needs to look at. The court doesn't need to look at if someone has ever thrown a rock through someone's window. The court acknowledges, and this attorney acknowledges, that rocks have been thrown through windows in lover's spats. However, the circumstances surrounding it, which give rise to the guilty finding as purported by Ms. Brookman, are inherently incredible. It is unbelievable that this event occurred the way she said it did, and the only way that my client can be found guilty is if this event occurred the way Ms. Brookman said it did.
What aspects of it are unbelievable?
Number one, Your Honor, she states that this happened at late at night, that there was a loud ruckus that happened, that there was screaming, there was yelling, there was cursing, there was glass breaking. I believe at one point she says my client used her fist and was banging on the windows. Yet this is a close, tight-knit apartment complex building, Your Honor, where the cars are parked right up to the building. There's doors surrounding every direction. Not one person comes to her aid. Not one person comes to the door. No one is notified. No one from the apartment complex office comes to her door. She claims the police came that night. There's no pictures from the police. There's no incident report. She claims, I believe, that three police cars showed up at her door for a felony incident, but the warrant is not taken out until days later. That is beyond the experience that this court can recognize of human experience in dealing with a felony and police activity and dealing in a close proximity situation as this. The case that I quoted in my brief and I rely on is Legions. It's very similar to this. It's a case where a man supposedly broke into a home in a close community, raped a woman with her husband there, and supposedly no one did anything to stop it. There was no noise. Nothing was heard. The court said that that is inherently incredible that it happened the way that this victim is stating. And just to go ahead and short-circuit the Commonwealth, I know they quoted several cases where the court seemed to say something different than that. And I would distinguish those in that the court in those cases, did not state that there was a ruckus. Those cases were taken under secrecy. And if you let me flip, I can tell you, it's Barker versus, I'm sorry. It was the cases quoted by in Wilson and Shroom, Your Honor, the two cases the Commonwealth used in their brief. And those, it was challenged under inherently incredible because there was no one who heard the alleged crimes.
Do you know when the last time was the Virginia Supreme Court found a testimony underlying a criminal conviction inherently incredible to the point that it overturned the conviction?
Your Honor, I believe it's before I was born. And that's why I was so very excited that my appeal was granted.
Fair enough.
And, Your Honor, I would also state that the fact that the Commonwealth attorney in their reply brief could not even keep the complaining witness and her daughter's testimony straight in their reply brief shows how inherently incredible that testimony is. They misquote, and I can give you the exact pages if you would like. I believe it's pages 34 through 35 in the brief in opposition, which I included in my appendix, Your Honor. They misquote the daughter, Tanisha, claiming that that's Mrs. Berkman.
Well, you cleared that hurdle. You're dealing with Mr. Stoller's brief now.
Right. So, but what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that that just shows how inherently incredible is that even the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, Your Honor, had to make, they could not even believe the testimony as it was given.
Either that or they were just sloppy when they were doing their brief in opposition.
Well, I would choose to believe that my argument is correct.
Fair enough.
And therefore, Your Honor, I do believe that the testimony given by Ms. Berkman is not believable. That is not a believable story of how this situation went, that her minor children were influenced by her, and there's inconsistencies with their testimony as purported against hers. The older daughter, who's 17, stated that there were three people outside the window trying to get her information. The 17-year-old daughter also states that no one ever left the room. However, the younger daughter, Angelina, states that she did leave the room to go get her mother.
But there are any number of cases that say not only are inconsistencies among witnesses not something that makes something inherently incredible as a matter of law, inconsistencies from the same witness does not render the testimony inherently incredible.
I understand that, Your Honor. However, we are looking at this as a totality of the experience, Your Honor, totality of the circumstances in deciding whether or not the story is inherently incredible. Therefore, you have to look at it from a very specific view in this case. And while those cases may have been found to be like that, this specific case, Your Honor, those details are very important because they tell the story of what supposedly happened that night. And my argument is that Ms. Berkman is a jaded lover who was upset that her man chose to marry another woman, and so she made up a story. How that window was broken, I may never know, and you may never know, but it was not Mrs. Clark.
Well, and that, your theory, as you've just described it, and you've described it very articulately and very passionately, that argument was made to the trier of fact, wasn't it?
It was, Your Honor, and I think it's interesting to note that they did not find her guilty as charged. They split the baby. They found her guilty of a lesser-included felony and gave her a fine. I think that is very interesting, and there's case law on that to show that sometimes when you have a jury who does that, that maybe they didn't really believe the complainant, Your Honor. And I believe that was in Young versus Commonwealth, Your Honor. And, Your Honor, at this point, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Stoller.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Greg Stoller on behalf of the Commonwealth. Your Honors, the trier of fact was faced with two wildly different theories of what happened this evening. And the trier of fact's job is to weed through the testimony and decide which one tells a credible story. And the trier of fact in this case found that the victim in this case told a credible story. The trier of fact was aware of all the inconsistencies counsel points out today. And let me just say, I welcome the enthusiasm of the defense counsel with this case. I appreciate that. However, the fact that no one responded to the noise in an apartment building standing by itself is not telling one way or the other, as opposed to what kind of neighborhood they're living in, whether or not someone's willing to go out when there's a loud ruckus out in the hall or across the street. Some neighbors are more willing than others. That doesn't mean the victim's story is incredible. The fact that the police, or the testimony was that the police did arrive, there's no extrinsic evidence establishing the police arrived, that is something the fact finder was aware of. and they were able to consider that when determining whether or not they found the victim credible. What they also were able to consider was the defendant's version of events. Now, the defendant's version of events says that she was proposed to by Mr. Clark, and that she initially declined that because of his infidelities with the victim in this case. So in order to decide that they were going to marry, the idea was, I will drop my fiancé off with the paramour while I go get my hair done, leaving her and him alone together for, based on her testimony, for about an hour. That seems inherently incredible, that you would leave the fiancé you don't trust with the very person you don't trust him with, on its face. Coupled with that, we have the alibi testimony, or purported alibi testimony, of the person who is having her hair done. She says she got to the hair, the defendant says she got her hair done about 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night. The alibi witness testified she came over around 1 in the afternoon and left by 5 in the afternoon. Even on brief, they acknowledged the alibi testimony is inconsistent with the other witnesses. That seems to be inherently incredible, to have your own alibi witness directly contradict your own testimony. So the fact finder here had a number of things to wade through to find out what in fact actually happened. Clearly what everybody agrees on is there were some issues between Mr. Clark, the victim, and the defendant in this case. But when it comes down to the fact, there's photographs, the window was broken, the blinds were in disarray, there's photographic evidence establishing that. The victim testified she saw the defendant pick up a rock, hold it in her hand, and throw it at the window, striking the window, breaking it, and coming in and striking her. There was nothing inherently incredible about the testimony on its face. There's nothing for this court to point to and say that is unworthy of belief. There's nothing that the fact finder clearly was aware of, and they were aware of everything counsel mentions today to find her not to be credible. As a fact finder, I believe the victim, given the standard review, I'd ask this court to affirm the convictions. I'll be happy to answer any questions the court may have.
Thank you, Mr. Dollar.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Crawford, you have some time left for rebuttal if you wish to use it.
Yes, sir. Opposing counsel brings up that the victim supposedly saw my client pick up a rock and throw it, and he also brings up the picture of the broken window. It's very interesting, in that picture of the broken window, the blinds are closed. Another instance of where it's inherently incredible that she saw this if the blinds were closed. Also, if the court would look at the picture, they will notice the extreme damage to the upper portion of the window. My client is very short. She couldn't reach that high. And the victim on cross-examination stated that she was climbing and jumping and trying to get into the window. Again, inherently incredible. It's just not possible, Your Honor. I could go on and on with my passion because I believe in this case, but I believe I've made all the legal points that I can make, and so I will not badger you anymore.
Didn't consider it badgering, but thank you. And